Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And this is the Shame Free Zone. Whoops, I'm talking all over a little bit of music there. Anyway, welcome to the Shame Free Zone. I'm your host, Veronica Monet. I'm very excited about tonight's topic, and so are all of you, actually. Those of you out there in Facebook land have already started posting comments and sharing stories. We're going to be talking about UFOs, paranormal phenomena, psychic phenomena, ghosts, and also the spiritual implications. So we might even be touching on things like the laws of attraction, self-esteem. My guest tonight is Les Rogers, and he's actually something of an authority on these topics. He worked in the media for quite a few years and still does, but specifically he worked for some shows like Sightings and Encounters, and he's interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people on these very topics and met them, looked at their evidence, and he's got a lot of interesting insights to share with us. So if you enjoy those kind of shows, like Sightings and Encounters, documentaries about UFOs and encounters of the third kind or whatever, then you're going to really enjoy tonight's show. Les is also the author of a book called Rollovers, Rattlesnakes, and UFOs, and you can check out his website. It is Les Rogers. Now, that's spelled LesRogers, and then AZ for Arizona. .com. So LesRogersAZ.com. And if you happen to be a friend of mine on Facebook, you can actually go over there right now, go over to my wall, go to your wall. I've already got it posted for your convenience, as well as the link here to the Shame Free Zone. Anyway, Les, thank you so much for joining me here on the Shame Free Zone on BBS Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. You know, you sent me a copy of your book, a very, very nicely autographed copy of your book, a couple of years ago, and it took me a while to get around to reading it, and I was at first a little reticent, you know. I was a little skeptical about some of this stuff, and, you know, it was kind of a little roller coaster reading your book, and then it got to the end, and all of a sudden, it scared the heck out of me. You started talking about encounters with, you know, maybe some not-so-friendly spirits. And I actually related to that because I've had a few experiences of those nature myself, and then I realized that I'd kind of shut the door on that. So I hope we'll be touching on that topic tonight, but why don't you go ahead and start off by, you know, just sharing what you would like the audience to know about you, maybe what you do right now and where they can get a copy of your book. That might be a good thing for them to know.
Well, you can get it on Amazon, and you can get it at my website, LesRogersAZ.com. And, yes, I still work in the media. I have a video production company here in Phoenix. I've had my own business for about, how old am I now? Almost 23 years. I've been in the business for over 30 years. I've worked for three different television stations. Yes, I did work for, I did a lot of work for Sightings from their inception until they ended, and I actually got caught up in some of the things that we were involved in, and it was very interesting how I even got involved with them. I was looking into producing a show on paranormal experiences here in the Southwest, and I had a meeting with another producer, and after she left, the phone rang, and it was Sightings, and they had just started up, and they said, listen, we're a new show, and we're with Paramount, and we would like you to work for us on some shoots here or in Phoenix. And I said, well, sure. So it was almost like I called them in, and I guess I did, because I really wanted to know a lot more about everything in the psychic world, as what people call it, the paranormal world, because I was just curious about life, about myself, trying to understand, you know, the religious aspects of life, spiritual aspects of life, but again, back to us, who are we and where are we from?
Well, that's a good question. That's a very broad question.
Yes, I'm still trying to get the answer, but.
Well, maybe before we tackle those really big questions here, we could give our listeners something a little more tangible. Did you see convincing evidence of, you know, and I know the answers to some of these, but I want them to hear it from you. Convincing evidence about UFOs.
Well, yes. I believe everybody should be a very healthy skeptic. You just don't believe things to believe it or to be accepted by others, and just trying to get acceptance from anybody. I think you can ask those questions and things will come to you, because I've asked these questions and things have come to me. The first experience I had with UFO, and I used to ask people about UFOs. I wasn't, you know, super, super interested or obsessed by any means, but I had a slight curiosity. But back in 1981, I saw a UFO. First, you know, I didn't think it was a UFO. I thought it was a helicopter. I was coming back from my hometown of Casa Grande, Arizona, south of Phoenix, and driving back up to the valley with a couple of friends of mine. And I saw some interesting lights in the sky. As we got closer, I thought, well, it must be a helicopter or, you know, something like that. It was so still, and the closer we got, it was just too still, and then the lights were in a V-shape, and we got closer and closer, and we got within about 150 yards, and I saw that it was a triangular craft, and I'm trying to get my buddy to pull over, and he's an engineer, and he had that kind of engineer mind that, no, it can't be anything but something that man made, something from this planet. And but his brother's in the back seat looking at it. I'm trying to get Mike to pull over, and I'm trying to coerce Mike into pulling over. His brother sees this thing just flash out and disappear, and so that was the start of it.
Well, it's pretty phenomenal. It's way more exciting than my UFO. My sister and I were in our teens, and we happened to see a bright object moving along the horizon, and we were homeschooled, so I can tell you we were really used to watching that. we didn't have a social life, so I knew what planes looked like and sound like and helicopters, and we'd actually ridden in both too, you know, so we were, you know, aircraft was something we're pretty familiar with. It moved differently. It didn't make sound.
And
we thought, okay, well, you know, that If ever there was going to be a UFO, that must be it. But we thought, well, probably not. We're probably mistaken. And then that night we tuned into the local radio, and somebody had actually called it in as a UFO.
Well, you know, our minds want to tell us that we can figure these things out. And so we kind of just, you know, let it go by and think nothing of it. And I was working for KPHO-TV here in Phoenix at the time. I was in their news department. I was editing and also a news photojournalist for them. And when I got to work, that was a Saturday night. When I got to work on Monday, I didn't say anything to anybody. I didn't want to, you know, get too far out there. I was trying to figure it out myself. But I didn't become obsessed with it. I didn't feel like I had to change my life and my thoughts and things like that. It was just something, but it really opened me up more so. And again, I feel that we call these things in. We call these experiences in. I believe that we call this whole experience, this what we call this Earth experience, in at some time. But that may be too long of a subject to get into. But this is the way I think. And then the next time I saw something was and when was that? I think it was 88 or so, or 89. And I was doing a video shoot up in Sedona, Arizona. And I was with my producer and a production assistant. And afterwards, we went to visit a friend of the producer, friends of the producer who lived up there. And I jokingly just asked them if they had ever seen a UFO. And the guy kind of laughed. He was a psychologist, a child psychologist. And he kind of laughed. And he goes, no, no. And he goes, I've heard stories and things. And he had moved out from Chicago to Sedona. And about a half hour to 45 minutes after that, we see something in the sky. And it was a light moving slowly, and it just stopped. and illuminated cloud just kind of went out the backside, if there was a backside. You really couldn't tell, you know, if it was a mile away or 1,000 miles away. It was just, but it stayed there for 20 minutes.
Wow.
And I went and called the Department of Public Safety just to see if there had been any other calls on it, and the guy said no, and I thought, well, you know, the guy probably thinks I'm a nut.
That's all of us are afraid of that, right? You know.
Well, not anymore. I used to be, but not anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I let people, you know, I mean, people are going to think what they're going to think, and I don't take things personally. But
well,
yeah.
Let's stop there for just a second, okay?
Because
I want to. There's actually a comment here on Facebook. Becky Barnes responded to a question I put out there. I said, have you ever seen a ghost or a UFO? And Becky Barnes comes back and says, I have, but I also learned at a young age that others didn't see the things I do,
mm-hmm.
and I don't tend to talk about those things.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you share for Becky?
Well, that's true. You know, there's a door that we open to the amount of awareness that we are looking for. And we are so fear-based. A lot of us don't want to open any doors, but except for the one that, you know, takes us out into our backyard or something.
Or out of the office, right?
Or out of the office, yes. But we do, that's what I mean by asking the questions. You know, a lot of people ask me if, you know, Les, is there a God? I say, well, I think there is, you know, whatever it is the way I view it. But and they said, well, what is God? And I said, well, I can't tell you. You have to ask that question. You have to put that out and see how it comes back to you. But if you, I mean, you don't even have to say it verbally. You can just say it in your mind. Some people do see things that other people don't. And I mean, you can go walking down the street and there's something so obvious and say, hey, look at that person. You know, where? Well, right over there. Well, I don't see them. Well, no, that person in the green shirt. And people will not see it.
You know what? It's funny you bring that up because we actually, I was just in a seminar 2 weeks ago. And it was a Jack Canfield seminar, you know, one of the guys from The Secret who teaches the laws of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
He had a video where he said, okay, now I want you to watch. There's going to be the white team and the blue team. They're playing basketball. And you need to count how many times the ball has passed between members of the white team. So that was the task that we were given. Then when, you know, it ended, he said, did you see the gorilla? I sure didn't. There was actually a woman in front of me who had, but
mm-hmm.
most of the people in my row had not. So he played it back over and said, okay, now look for the gorilla. Well, there's this guy in a gorilla suit who comes sauntering out at an incredibly slow pace. Now, he wasn't on the sidelines. He walked right in the middle of the game, was standing there gawking at the camera while the basketball is being passed back and forth, and I never saw it.
Well, we get caught up in our heads thinking about things, too, at certain times. It's just like, and a lot of guys can really understand this. A woman can be talking to a man for maybe 20 seconds, and a guy will never hear it. And the woman will say, well, I'm talking to you. Don't you hear? What was that? And a lot of times you just need to get the guy's attention first. We don't give our attention to a lot of things because we're caught in our head. And that's normal. That's normal. And also a lot of things that we do, as far as seeing things, we have these preconceived notions about, you know, what we're supposed to see out there. And we have preconceived notions about who we are. And a lot of people really don't know who they are. And I don't think any of us will really truly know who we are till we take our last breath. But that's the way life is. And that's what's interesting about this life. That's what's fun about this life. It shouldn't be something to be fearful of. It should be something to just enjoy, to take in fully. And we don't stay here very long. We're just passing through. We're kind of tucked into these bodies, the way I look at it, our spirit in these bodies, and we're just passing through. We live our bodies live a very short life. Our spirit is just on a continuation. we've entered another room in a very large house. That's the way I look at it. And there are many things in this house. There are many rooms to this house. And there are ghosts. There are UFOs. There are other people. There are, and the way I look at people is they are a direct, when I look at them, I'm looking at the Creator, and I'm looking at myself.
Right, so you honor them and you respect them.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get back to our topic a little bit here, I do my listeners some justice here because people are posting comments. There's a Brian Battles who says, do you think people claim to see ghosts or UFOs are crazy, or do you believe them? And Brian Battles says, I don't think they're crazy, just mistaken. Goes on to say, I've seen plenty of UFOs, and I don't think any of them had anything to do with space aliens, but they were unidentified flying objects. What do you say about that? Because, you know, there are certainly a lot of government installations who tried to explain UFOs away as weather balloons. And then there's actually a theory out there that, the government's covering up the technology that they've developed and that they are out testing flying objects that they don't want us to know about, and that has nothing to do with visitors from outer space.
Well, that's okay. You know, we are so programmed to see things out there or to not see things. I believe that people, and there are out there right now that can see better into the other dimensions that we are a part of. And we see many things when we are asleep that we, don't see when we're awake. Now, if a person believes that they're... I don't know. You know, as far as I know, maybe these things are from inside the Earth. Maybe the government has some things that we just don't know. But I tend not to go with that 100%. Again, it's good to be a healthy skeptic. You have, really, the bottom line, you need to believe in yourself more than anything, even if you're wrong at times, because then you'll learn if you're wrong or right. I do believe that there are other beings from other places, but they are us too. We are them, and they are us.
And one of the reasons that you believe that is because you actually have met some of them, right?
Well, yes, and this is, something that I met them under circumstances that give, with some people I have a lot of credibility with it, and for others it wipes away all credibility because I had an experience when I had eaten some psilocybin mushrooms. See, now right there people are going, oh, he was high, he was loaded,
right.
And that's fine. Now see, that's how they view their life in general. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I know what I know, and I had great awareness during that experience. And hey, I can't understand it. There's no way I can understand all that. But somewhere within me, within all of us, we have the understanding of everything somewhere, and that's why we can see things. That's why we can have out of body experiences, because this was a type of experience that was an out of body experience. And it started off when I saw these beings. I mean, as far as I knew, I left the planet. But I left the planet in another body that I have, and I guess that's my spirit or something. But before I left, I was with a friend of mine. We had eaten these together, and I was in my mid-20s. As we started, my awareness went beyond the apartment that I was in and above the building, and I was outside, and I saw his wife drive into the parking lot, and I said, Bill, Kim is here. And he goes, oh, where? I didn't even see her walk in. I said, no. Well, she just drove into the parking lot. He goes, just drove into the parking lot? I said, yes. He goes, how do you know that? I said, I can see her. And then she comes in through the door. And he looks at me like, how'd you do that? And I can't tell you how I did that. It just happened.
I found that part of your story very compelling. I really did. I think a lot of people have had out-of-body experiences. I had one on drugs. I had taken too much marijuana, and I was very young and inexperienced, and I was trying to match bong hits with some aging hippies who obviously had some really good weed that I'd never, ever gotten my hands on before. So I got pushed right out of my body, and I can remember looking down at the scene, and it was like I was on the ceiling, only I was above the ceiling, and that makes absolutely no sense, but I was further above my body in this scene than the ceiling would have accommodated.
Now, so, see, I see these things as normal. This
yeah.
is something that I see as normal because I've had other out-of-body experiences without any drugs or alcohol. I'm not a drug user. I don't drink a lot of alcohol. I like beer every now and then. But I like sobriety. I like being aware because
mm-hmm.
I look around and I see into people. But I see into people because I see into myself. And people, when I tell a person their name, because I all of a sudden a name comes to me and I tell them, it freaks them out.
Yeah.
And it tickles me. And yet I'm nothing special. I have nothing more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that's the way it's been in my life and I enjoy it. Except the one part that you were talking about that scared you when you get into ghosts.
Yeah.
Evil spirits. I'll put it that way. Evil spirits. But I look
that
at you know.
Sounds so arcane to say that. Evil spirits.
yeah, I know. Evil spirits are coming. But as far as other beings, we're in this together. Everything that exists on this dimension or any other dimension, we're all in this together, and there's a mutual respect that is law. And if they break it, they know they've hurt themselves. As the same, when we break it, we don't feel right about ourselves. When we trespass on others, we feel it. We know. You know, some people call it a conscience, but it's greater than that because there are people walking around that don't really pay attention to that conscience, but they still know they're doing something that's not right.
Yeah.
You know, we're all in this together.
And for myself, I resonate with Native American spirituality. And when I say we, I mean we, as in all the sentient beings on this planet. I think people, you know, underestimate what's going on a lot of different levels. You know, they haven't even figured out how homing pigeons come home, and they haven't figured out how wolves coordinate a hunt when they're out of line of sight and they have no scent to guide them. But apparently they're able to communicate somehow, even though we don't know how.
Well, we do all the time, and you know, our conversations with each other are more nonverbal. There's a lot that goes into that. But we get feelings about each other. We get feelings about places. We listen.
But oftentimes we are trained
to ignore
them, to invalidate those.
Yes.
So, you know, I know with my clients, a lot of times I have to try to help reconnect them to their intuition, and a lot of that requires like connecting with the breath and getting back into their body because they are so exclusively making decisions from their head. And it's all about thought, you know, logical thought processes, which I think is a very handy way of using the brain, but it's only one way to think, and it's, you know, there's times when it's incredibly inaccurate and inadequate.
Well, we get too intellectual for our own good. That's the physical mind. The greatest mind that we have is what I call the God mind. That's that mind that we are really a part of, that has made all this, that has brought us here, that made the stuff for the Big Bang, however that works. But I'm not great enough to understand all of that. We will see that when we pass here. I mean, I think there are masters on this planet right now that maybe do understand that. Masters have walked this earth, I think, from the beginning. And I'm not I don't call myself, I'm not really into religion, into dogma of religion. I'm a very spiritual person. I'm a strong believer in Jesus Christ, but not about religion, but about truth. I believe in God, not about religion, but about truth. But God is, you know, my way of how I see God, and I will share that with people, but I will direct them to themselves to figure out what God is to them. Not don't take my my idea for yourself. You know, you have all that power with you.
So if we've got a comment here on Facebook from Ramon Rivera, who says, I've seen UFOs, and I feel, sense, ghosts, spirits, entities. On occasion, I see them, mostly peripherally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's interesting that Ramon talks about seeing ghosts peripherally because I had an experience recently where my dog became terminally ill with cancer and didn't know that he was terminally ill at the time, so did life-saving surgery. But he had gotten so close to death's door. He really literally had almost died. Perhaps he did, I don't know, but we had to use two transfusions to bring him back. And so when I brought him home, he was so drugged up, he really didn't even know where he was and who I was. And he'd lost a whole bunch of weight, and it just looked horrible. And his lover had died like 2 years before because she'd gotten hit by a car. Now, they were just really, really bonded to each other in a very special way. He'd raised her from a puppy, literally. I mean, I was amazed to watch him raise her, this puppy. I was like, it was so bad that when I would give a command like sit or, you know, lay down, she'd always look over at him to see what I was saying. She didn't even, and if he was out of the room, she was lost. She just had very little grasp of the English language. So, anyway, I had, I was brushing my teeth, and out of the corner of my eye, I could see her coming into the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the veil was so thin, you know, at that particular moment. And, you know, he was so close to dying, it was almost as if she had come back to retrieve him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got well, he put on his weight, and I couldn't sense her anymore. And I did have a feeling like she was in the house for a couple of days. And then, and then it's like you don't feel anything. You feel nothing and you see nothing. But I thought, I wondered about that because usually when I have sensed something, it has often been in the corner of my eyes, and then, you know, I go to look and there's nothing there. And I'm wondering if you have interviewed people about that.
Oh, yes. I mean, I know people, I mean, friends that have talked about that. I know a gal that whose father was a New York cop. And she talked about him and her father and her mother would see things in their house, and it was on the peripheral, just like this guy had said. And I hear that a lot. It's, you know, if you look directly at it, it's gone.
Yeah.
But the thing is, one thing that you're talking about, you know, when you love something, you know, everything is energy. And we create energy, another punch to our energy with love. And when you love something enough, you will see things. I remember when I was in fifth grade, I loved this girl. Her name was Pam. Oh, I was just crazy about her. And she moved away. And I was really bummed out. And one day on the playground, I was just out there and I saw Pam on the playground. Now she hadn't died, but I saw Pam. And then she wasn't there.
Interesting.
Now, we can, we have a connection with everybody. You know, I mean, I haven't met you in person, but I've met you. And I can see you, and I can feel who you are. I don't need to be next to you. And that's the way we are. We can create these things also, but it's in our mind. It'll look, we project it out there, and we do that, but people, when they contact us from the other side, a lot of times, it's from within, and we can project their look out there. I mean, we're very powerful beings. We're very great beings. We are the greatest of the great. And we don't give ourselves much credit. We're always too caught up thinking about what terrible people we are, what mistakes we've made, what stupid things we do. We spend more time with that than thinking about how great we are.
Now, that's interesting you bring that up. I know this is one of the topics that you're very passionate about, and I'd actually posted this to Facebook, and I had said my guest tonight says you can never love yourself enough. And then
that's
I asked
true.
People, Do you agree? Did your parents and teachers agree when you were growing up? And we've got a comment here from Lance Holland who says, as long as it's healthy love and not full of your self adoration.
No, not narcissistic love. That's
well,
all
how
ego.
How would you distinguish those?
Well, when you care about yourself, almost like you're two separate people, look at the child that you really are, and that's the greatness. That's the beauty of this place. We are all children. You know, we're in the dark many times, but we can have fun with that. We're children. And look at the child that you are. Take care of it. Treat it well. Just love it. Because the more you love yourself, the more you're loving every being that exists. You're loving everything. And that's what that love is that I talk about. And you're doing everybody a favor when you love yourself more and more. Not being in love with yourself. But you just love who you are. You love getting up in the morning. You love going out for a walk. You love the people that are in front of you. And things are created out of that that are beyond expectations sometimes. But we can always expect the best with love. You know, it's powerful energy, and it's really what we are, whatever that is. And that's the thing about it. What we're doing, we're letting it circulate. We're letting ourselves be channels. Because when you're loving yourself, it's coming, I believe, it connects more with the source, and it flows through you, flows to other people. Can feel it. They say, wow, a lot of people will say, you know, Les, when I'm around you, you know, I always feel so good. I say, well, give yourself that credit. Because you love being around me, and you're loving yourself, and I thank you. And I said, you know, I feel good when I'm around you too, and I feel good when I'm around other people, and I feel good when I'm just by myself. But it is important to be around others to circulate that energy. It needs to be circulated, just like the water in the pipes there at your house. Because you know, if it doesn't circulate, it's going to get a little rusty, and it's going to close up, and that light's not going to shine through as much. And we see a lot of people out there that have clogged their pipes with drugs and alcohol and sex addictions, any addiction. Mm-hmm. You know, because you get stuck on that. You become obsessed with these things.
Well, I personally think addiction is all about trying to make sure that you're not fully alive.
It's avoidance. It's self-avoidance.
Yeah, people are trying not to have feelings, and there is almost a sense of being overwhelmed by one's personal power and personal awareness and potential. I think it's kind of like Marianne Williamson says, it's not that we're afraid of failure, we're afraid of success, and we're afraid of all the opportunities that are before us.
Well, a lot of people feel that they don't deserve their love or anybody's love, and that's really sad. They feel like, you know, if they believe in God, they feel, oh, God doesn't love me. Well, you know, don't do that. You're fooling yourself. That's your ego. And an ego isn't your best friend. You know, I wanted to say something also. You know, I wrote this book after I survived a very bad accident here in Phoenix. I was in a rollover accident. That's where the part of the title comes from.
Rollover travel snakes and UFOs.
Yes. And I was in a rollover accident. A young kid hit me while on I-17, and I rolled 7 times. That was what a witness said, anyway. And
that's a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a very interesting trip, and it's amazing that I'm here on the phone with you. But it got me to write the book, because I wasn't going to tell people about, you know, doing the psilocybin mushrooms and seeing beings, and I wasn't going to tell people about having an experience with some real evil spirit. Why would I want anybody to know that about me? I didn't want to scare them by, you know, especially my family going, oh no, what's happened to Les? He's lost his mind. But it knocked my ego down. The thing is, that was the third rollover of my life. I was in a rollover when I was 14 years old. I was driving. I was out in the desert and just wasn't a very good driver. And then I was in a rollover when I was 22. I wasn't driving. I was with a couple of friends. And then when I was 46, I was in this rollover. And that was in 2001.
I would have to say, yeah, you might not be the best driver. No.
No. Well, hey, the odds are with me now. I'm not going to be in another accident for as long
as I live. Let's not tempt fate.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but if people joke with me all the time, they go, oh, should I get in the car with you or should I not?
Yeah, really. This guy has a tendency to roll
but,
the vehicle.
But I say it really knocked these stories out of me.
Hmm.
And they needed, because I was afraid, you know, of my reputation. I was, you know, I didn't want people having this, you know, like kind of avoidance of me. I think, hey,
sure.
You know, watch out for him. He's kind of loco. And but people knew me well.
Well, you've been bumped on the head too many times.
Why? Yeah, really? Well, that was by the nuns in Catholic school, but that's another story.
Well, there's that too, right?
but no, I had some good nuns. But it took me to just knock that ego down. It took my a good shot of my ego out of the way, got rid of the fear, wrote it. And as I wrote this book, I did question myself at times again, saying, do you really want people to know it? And this voice in my head, and it was my voice, but it seemed like it came from someplace else, it just said, just write the book. And as I wrote this book, there were times I felt like I was in so much light. I felt so guided in writing this book. And, I mean, I would just feel great, and I'd love to get around my friends and get all this light on them as well. And then it would, you know, you can kick up everybody's light, and it starts throwing back on you. And that's what I love about people. And my wife, I drive my wife crazy. I think I've driven a lot of my friends crazy just by how I love being around people, and I'm talking about people I don't know that I just meet. I don't care if it's some guy on the street who's talking to the sky, or a priest, or an atheist, or anybody. I enjoy being around people. I love listening to them. I love hearing their ideas. But more importantly, I love talking to them with my mind, heart, and soul, and speaking on that nonverbal plane. Because I hear them, and they hear me, whether they're consciously aware of that or not, I see that they hear me, because I can see by their actions how they respond. And this is so interesting to do. All of us do this all the time, and yet we don't even have the awareness. A lot of us don't have the awareness of it, and it's fun. And that's, you know, people that we have problems with, you know, maybe family members, we're clashing with them, or friends, or husbands, wives, whatever. When you can't verbally speak to somebody, speak with them, but you need to come from love. Speak to them with your mind, heart, and soul. Tell them things. Tell them, you know, ask them things. And see what happens with them in your relationship. See what happens with you. Because they do talk back to us. And then we'll see how we react. I mean, this is a great place. This is a great, you know, Veronica, you and I, and everybody else listening, we're all here for a reason. Everybody on the planet right now, we're all here at the same time for the same reason. We wanted to be here. And things happen to move us. You know, a lot of people, you know, they get it caught up in the politics one way or the other. That is too much ego stuff. When we label ourselves a Republican, a Democrat, even when we label ourselves gay or heterosexual, when you keep labeling and labeling and labeling, you're going to lose yourself. You're not going to find yourself.
So,
you're caught in your ego.
So basically what you're sharing with me is that you've had some near-death experiences that have really caused you to look at the bigger picture, right?
Yeah, and I
wonder if you could share with the listeners another near-death experience you had, which is the rattlesnake pit. That was a really interesting story.
Well, I was 19 years old when I first had the worst experience with rattlesnakes. Before I get to the one when I was 26 years old. Yes, I got caught in a cave by at least three rattlesnakes that I could see. It was an old silver mine south of my hometown, out on the Tohono O'odham Indian Reservation. And I was there on my motorcycle. I'd taken a girlfriend out there, and it was a very warm day. She wanted to go for a motorcycle ride, and I thought, oh, I'll take her out there. And we went walking into this cave. I'd been there a million times and I'd always been aware of rattlesnakes, but this time I saw some people walking around there, and I thought, oh, they must have been inside the cave. And so I let my guard down and walked in, and I heard a buzzing right there at the entrance. And the gal was standing just a couple of feet away from the largest diamondback rattlesnake I had ever seen out in the wild. And
wasn't it about 9 feet long or something?
Well, this one was over 5 feet, and it was thick. And I didn't want to freak Diana out, so I just calmly said, hey, Diana, come here. I want to show you something. And she walked over. I said, hey, I didn't want to scare you, but you were standing right by that rattlesnake. And she just freaked right there. I said, don't worry. We'll get out of here. And I started throwing some rocks, because I was very naive, actually. I could have done it a different way, but I felt I had to kill this thing. So I started throwing rocks, and there was a larger rock just above its head, and I really couldn't get to the head, and it seemed like these other rocks were just bouncing off the body. And I went reaching out for another rock, and there's another rattlesnake. And I was so close to that, it could have bitten me in the hand. And then I thought, oh, my goodness. And I jumped back, and I thought, well, okay, I have two rattlesnakes now. And I'm trying to take care of Diana, and I'm thinking, boy, I've got us in a mess here. And because the cave was only about as wide as I could stretch my arms out, and just maybe a little higher than the top of my head. So I go reaching for another rock, and there's a larger snake there too, and it could have hit me in the face or in the upper body somewhere. I let out a scream. Diana freaked out, and she tried to literally just latch herself, get off the ground, jump on the wall of the cave to just hang on, to just get off the ground, because at that point I had no idea how many more rattlesnakes were in there. And I stopped. And I said, Diana, here, and I put my arms around her, I held her hand, I said, we need to relax, we can't have our blood pumping to us like this, because if something does happen, we're going to die. And so we calmed down, I said, but we're not going to die, I said, we're going to get out of this, and I said a prayer.
Yeah, no, just a second, I want to make sure the listeners understand that if you get bit by a rattlesnake when your blood is pumping really fast from fear, it's just going to speed the toxin through your body that much quicker and shut down your heart.
Well, and the thing is, I learned a great lesson from that, And we did get out of there, naturally, but I said a little prayer, and I asked for a stick or something, and right there down my feet was a steel pipe, the length of the stick that I had in my mind, and I was able to kind of move this rattlesnake out of the side there, and I could see it, and it just came right at me, and I pounded the heck. I did overkill on this snake, but anyway, that set me up to be calm if I ever got in that situation again.
Mm-hmm.
And 7 years later, I found myself in that situation.
With the rattlesnake again.
With the rattlesnake, but it wasn't in a cave. I was out with a buddy of mine.
Right. And you actually got bit this time.
And I was bitten by the most poisonous rattlesnake that there is in the country, a Mojave rattlesnake. And to put it into perspective, it's 10 times more poisonous than a diamondback. It has a hemotoxin as well as a neurotoxin. A neurotoxin as well as a hemotoxin.
Wow.
So it can shut down your nervous system and still wipe out your blood as well. But I was very calm. And when I was bitten, I was actually in a rock throwing contest with my buddy. We were throwing a target out in the desert. And we were getting ready to climb this little hill, and I thought, I'm going to throw one more. And I reached down, and as I reached down for this rock, I turned my head to look at the target. And at that point, I was struck by this snake. But I thought I hit a little cactus or something.
Yeah.
I just didn't see it, and I thought I hit this little cactus.
Right.
So I thought, wow, and I looked back down, and there's the rattlesnake. And so I immediately, and I was hit in my right index finger, and just below the top knuckle. And I immediately started milking my finger. But I was very calm, and I thought, wow. And I was very, very calm because of not of anything that day, but something that had started a couple of weeks earlier. And this is the thing about life again. Something,
because you were having premonitions of something.
Well, I was having a strange anxiety. It wasn't anything debilitating, but I had the strange anxiety that I was being prepared for something. something was coming up. And things were happening as this was going on. I mean, there was, this gal had a wreck right in front of me, there at, in the parking lot at work. Then I was on my way to Tucson the day before the rattlesnake, bite. And there's another accident. I was visiting a friend. He was a farmer. His, foreman came to the door in shock about being in an accident and there were people hurt. And I went out there and there were these five guys that were hurt and nobody, I couldn't believe that the bystanders were just, and this was very rural Arizona, but the people that stopped, they were just looking. They weren't helping. They weren't assisting. So I just, became the paramedic, there.
Right.
And helped everybody. And I said, Les, you're being prepared for something. Well, the next day is when I was bitten. And when I was bitten, when I realized I was bitten, this anxiety left me. I hadn't felt so good, you know, in 2 weeks. It took a rattlesnake to make me feel good.
Well,
and
you're sure the toxin wasn't making you high?
No. It hadn't run through yet. But, no, so it was very interesting. And, you know, it's not really the events that are so amazing. It's always the stuff around the events.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting what really is swirling around it. But, you know, and the thing is, when I finally, when this gal had this accident in the parking lot at work, I spoke to somebody else. I was editing a newscast, and one of the reporters came in and saw me just staring at the monitor, and I turned around, and I said, Barbara, I'm going to tell you something here, and don't think I'm crazy. And I told her, I said, you know, my life's in danger, and I'm not going to be killed, but my life is in danger. She goes, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, I don't know. Something's coming up, and I said, it's not like a car accident or something that you would think. And she goes, oh, you're just snake bit. I said, you know, I wouldn't doubt it if that's it.
Wow.
And then that happened. I think it was
something?
Like 10 days later.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to check in with our listeners here because they're having a rather lively discussion here online. I had asked them, do you think people who claim to see ghosts or UFOs are crazy or do you believe them? Becky Barnes said, I believe some, but not all of them. And then we have Doug Barrett says, just guessing, I propose that those of us who are taught to disapprove sternly of certain aspects of our inborn human nature can repress those aspects so deeply that we may feel their activity only if projected safely on something reputedly alien, such as ghosts or UFOs. For instance, in my early teens, in a more fundamentalist household where my libido was socially crushed down by best intentions, I experienced the presence of a ghost once very strongly. This trick of the subconscious sets up confrontation with the question, when everyone says something has no place among us, but it's here to stay, how well do you personally choose to treat the misfit, however it may be personified? I'm neither qualified nor inclined to call that crazy. That's just the way the subconscious mind likes to work, using personification symbols as placeholders for concepts, much like mathematicians use math symbols as placeholders for concepts. Questions of conscience tend to demand fairly dramatic symbols because conscience means a lot to us in how we integrate internally and with others. I wouldn't really worry unless I saw someone not being nice to their ghosts and UFOs. I dated Christian girl who swore she was visited by a caring angel when she broke her back. She was one of the best companions and lovers I have ever known. She embraced her angel aspect, which made her a pleasure to be around. And then Becky Barnes comes back and says, Doug, if that's the case, then how, as a very young child, was I able to describe people that had passed on that I didn't ever know?
Mm-hmm.
What would that manifest from? And then Doug comes back and says, Becky, that sounds like a different kind of experience, more ordinary among sensitive and intuitive people. Sounds like you have pretty good fat bandwidth in your connection to everything. I asked my parents, when did my niece Shannon die? 6 months before my niece Shannon was born, let alone named or diagnosed, if she died of leukemia before she turned 3. That's just a matter of having an open data pipeline through the unconscious mind that connects with everything to the conscious mind that deals with items on a one at a time in sequence. So I don't. Before, I want to hear your comment, but first I want to weigh in myself and say that, you know, I'm always a little suspicious of conversations that have to go on for great lengths of time because I feel that rather than having an organic experience of life, one is spending an inordinate amount of time trying to classify it, quantify it, and dominate it. It's like I have to know what it is, and now I know what it is, so it doesn't have to scare me.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I hear there. I actually have a book called Fire in the Brain, and this scientist goes about explaining everything, every UFO, every ghost, every psychic phenomenon, every out-of-body experience, and it all comes down to chemicals for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's truth in that. But first off, I'd really have to say you have some intelligent listeners. And
of
very interesting
listen.
Yes, you do. And
I'm
impressed. So, chemicals in the brain, we are chemical. We're a physical, chemical body. And yet we are this energy beyond anything physical and chemical. It's, we're greater than we know, again. I think let me tell you a story. When I was a senior in high school, there was a guy in my class who had a little brother who was dying from leukemia. And he told me the story about his little brother, about how he told the family, and his parents were divorced. He told the family that when he died, he was going to take this one kitten from the litter that was born just a few weeks earlier with him. And also, he said he had a dream that he went to heaven. He saw everybody there, but Daddy, here's a little kid. This little kid was like 7 years old, 6 or 7 years old. But he also told them the day he was going to die.
Oh, my God.
Well, he died that day, and so did that kitten.
Oh, my God. How'd the kitten die?
Who knows? It just died. He took it. He took the kitten with him. He just went with the spirit, I guess.
Oh,
now, see,
God.
These things, you can't, you can try to intellectualize and try to intellectualize and try to intellectualize. But some things we just can't know while we have this physical chemical brain, because all it is a computer. It's programmed. But we have this other mind, this God mind, that frees us up, that says, that lets us know that there are all kinds of possibilities. And a lot of the best scientists know that. That's why they work with theory. Everything is not an absolute, but there's absolute truth to our existence and who we are, and it's a great thing. And that's what I believe is the absolute truth, that we are, we're all traveling. Everybody that can hear my voice right now, I talked with you before, and I'll talk with you after this physical thing. And we're all going to stand around going, we knew that. We just kind of clogged things up. And, and I believe that. Now, because of my out-of-body experiences, and I've had out-of-body experiences without drugs, when I was 20 years old. And I was feeling sorry for myself. I was attending a junior college, Central Arizona College, and I didn't know what the heck I wanted to be. That's what we always do. What am I supposed to be? Well, you already are. You are what you are. But I'm trying to figure out, what am I supposed to be? And I started scaring myself. I started crying. I was crying so hard. I needed money. I'm not from a wealthy family, middle class, hardworking family. My dad worked for the Southern Pacific Railroad. My mom was a secretary at one of the local banks. And I didn't have money to just go off somewhere to school. And this one night, I'm there, I'm crying, and all of a sudden I start praying. And just saying, because I scared myself, and I start praying, and all of a sudden a calmness came over me in during this prayer. I was so calm, and every muscle let go, it felt like. And I could feel the essence of what I truly am just float through this body, out through the top of my head, out in what seemed like space. And it seemed like I was a million miles away at the same time being next to my body. And the things that I was asking for just before that happened, I was being very selfish. I have had some wealthy relatives living in Tulsa, Oklahoma. My uncle had passed away, and my aunt was there. And I was thinking, why couldn't I have been the son of my Aunt Genevieve and my Uncle Leslie, who I was named after? And things like that. And then I wouldn't have to worry about money. I wouldn't have to, you know, it's just very selfish. And I'm really not a selfish person. Not in that way, anyway. I mean, with time and stuff like that. But so I was thinking that, and I really wanted to go to the University of Tulsa because I visited Tulsa, Oklahoma, and that's where they lived. And I loved that place. It was a beautiful place, and I really wanted to get out of Arizona. And that's the stuff I was thinking about. Well, I had this out-of-body experience. I came back into my body. I had this smile on my face. And I just fell asleep, and I was awakened by a phone call around 7 o'clock in the morning. It was my dad. And he said, "Are you awake?" And I said, "Well, now I am." He said, "Well, I have some news for you." And I said, "What's that?" He goes, "Your Aunt Genevieve from Tulsa, Oklahoma, contacted me. She wants to know if you'd like to go to the University of Tulsa, and she'll pay for it." Now, I hadn't spoken to this relative in two and a half years. And this manifested. And it was amazing. And I ended up going to the University of Tulsa. And I went there even before getting accepted. I wasn't even sure if my grades were good enough to be accepted. And yet I left. I went there. And but I thought, yeah, this is destiny. This is this is meant to happen. Yeah. And I went there, and I was accepted. I had a B average from the junior college. They actually told me they probably wouldn't have taken me out of high school. because I was an average student, a little bit better, but I didn't really apply myself. But things happen, and then while I'm there, the counselor, when I was being admitted and stuff, I was asked, "Well, what's your major?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." She said, "Well, what are you interested in?" And I just blurted out, "Television and radio." And she goes, "Okay, I'll put you down as a broadcast telecommunication major." And I thought, well, I've never even heard of that, and I didn't know there was anything you could major in television or radio. And it just went on and went on that way, and I've been in broadcasting, you know, since that time. And we can create our world, and it's amazing the power, but you got to be careful how you create it, because you can create it for better or for worse.
Yeah, well, I've certainly experienced with the laws of attraction. I'm very, very careful, actually, what I affirm, what I say is going to happen, because I've too often seen, you know, exactly whatever the words that come out of my mouth can take form very quickly, and the energy that I project out there takes form very quickly too. So I actually kind of have to watch my moods, because I can literally you know, if my energy's up, the phones ring. If my energy's down, the phones don't ring. And I'm just sitting here doing nothing except moving energy.
Yeah. And you know, this gentleman that spoke about the difference between a ghost and something else. Well, there are differences. You know, there are people that have passed away that are, as far as I'm concerned, they're still right here, wherever here really is. See, we keep thinking here is a physical place.
Mm-hmm.
But we have always been here. We've been nowhere but here, wherever here really is. That's what that's the way I look at it. And people that have passed, they're with us. And we can call them in. And we can, you know,
You actually do this quite often. You have conversations with several of your uncles on a pretty frequent basis.
Yes, well, I speak with many. Yes, I do, and then things manifest. But it's very normal for me, and it can be, you know, any time of the day, and I joke about it too. But it's just, for instance, you know, I was doing a video shoot in England with the host of this kid show, and on the way back, and I had worked with him before. in Malaysia doing this kid show. And he ended up being on a another program. I don't want to divulge his identity, but great guy, fantastic person, and he sensed that I knew some things, and on the way back from the shoot in England, he was talking about his grandfather, and his grandfather showed up. I could see him. I told him what he looked like. He could feel it. He could feel it through me. And he's talking to me. He's not moving his lips. It's on that level that we speak anyway.
Right.
That nonverbal. And I'm smiling because I'm getting all this great energy from the spirit. And from my friend and the host of the show. And I'm telling him things that I had no way of knowing. But the first thing, when we were in, before we worked in Malaysia, I first met him here in Arizona on the first shoot I ever worked with him on. And it was really strange because another chapter of this book it's called Guadalupe County Jail, A Dream Comes True. And that is all about precognitive dreaming and then some, a scrape with the law that I got in, got into. But anyway, I could see during the 3-day shoot that we had, the host of the show, and he was a young man, he was in his 20s, great guy, great personality, very charismatic. When he's in front of the camera, he's great, but when that camera was off of him, he went into a depressed state, and I could see that. So after everything was done, the producer and the host and I, we went out to dinner, and then I drove the host back to his hotel. And I stopped right before I got to the entrance of the hotel. And I said, I'm going to tell you a story. When I was 22 years old, I was driving through New Mexico with 12 pounds of marijuana. And I got busted. And I thought my world was going to fall apart, but I didn't let it. I kept a positive thought about everything, that for some odd reason this was all necessary. And that's really is, all of this is necessary. And I said, it was interesting. I they took me into jail. I'm thinking, this is 12 pounds of marijuana. First, I thought it was only 10 pounds. That was what the guy told me it was.
Yeah, tell the listeners again what year this was.
This was 1977.
Yeah, so 12 August. Pounds of marijuana was actually a pretty serious charge.
Yeah, and in New Mexico.
Right.
And I'm in jail, and I'm put in jail, and when the other inmates were off in their cells, I was in the common area. Sitting there, and I just started crying. And I said, "Hey, I can't go to prison." I was on my way back to the University of Tulsa. This was just before I started my senior year, and it seemed like such a terrible thing. But then I envisioned this empty courtroom, and I said, "You know, Les, you're never going to go inside that courtroom. Nothing's going to happen. You're going to get out of this." And I got out, no record of what happened, except for I had signed something that I had been caught with some marijuana, didn't give the amount, and it was I was charged with a misdemeanor, but I was never convicted.
Yeah.
And anyway, from the day that I was busted to the day it was over, it was exactly 28 days, and I was a free man. It cost $2,700. $2,700, that was it. But that was all the money in the world to me. And my dad and stepmom put that up for me.
Right.
But I didn't give up on me. And I told him this story. And as I'm telling him this story, his eyes are getting big. He's freaking out. He's kind of almost moving away from me. And if it wasn't, for the door being shut behind him, he would have been out of it, out of the vehicle. But he said, "Why are you telling me this story?" And I said, for some reason, you need to hear it. That, because I know when I tell somebody something, it's not that I need to hear it, it's that they need to hear it. A particular story.
Right.
A lot of times, but other things that go with it, maybe I need to hear that too, and because I still need to remind myself of things.
Yeah.
But I said, but you need to hear this for some odd reason, and I know that. And he goes, how did you know to tell me the story? Why would you tell me? I said, I just told you, and I don't know. He goes, you have no way to know this, but I just got busted in New Mexico with 10 pounds of marijuana, and I'm right in the middle of this right now, and I've been freaking out about this.
Yeah.
And see, we're moved to help each other.
Well,
that great spirit that we're about moves us to help. Because we are here to help each other, not to hurt each other. Some people just haven't gotten the memo.
Well, and I think that's the whole message behind your book, really, is not just to titillate people with stories about ghosts and UFOs, but actually to give people a message of hope and inspiration. We're going to turn back to our Facebook wall here. We've still got a huge conversation going on here. We've got Doug Barrett saying, the qualitative distinction I make between reading actual records of people who have lived and picking up sensations of things that feel otherworldly, like ghosts and UFOs, is that the former comes without an emotional payload, and the latter may be loaded with feelings of dread and avoidance that have come forward to be worked out. Reading a record of my niece's future was just data, like remembering something from yesterday, but with the time transposed. So then Becky Barnes says, so seeing dead people versus feeling them? And then Doug goes back. He says, ordinary feeling is present in facts, but magnified feeling tends to be a tip-off that the subconscious is staging a play with a story that needs some attention. But I'm just a people watcher and mediator, not a guy with a careful education. And I think about that. There are certain pieces of information that seem to come through that you kind of get a sense that your subconscious is trying to work something out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, maybe taking it literally is a bit of a mistake. And yet there's other stuff that, you know, it's like Becky was saying, she knew that somebody was going to die, and like the story you told about this young man who knew the hour and the date of his own death, that sometimes that information just seems to come through like a book or something.
Yeah, well, but see, everybody's right. They work in tandem a lot of times. You know, the thing about my ghost, it was, see, I felt that I was possessed, and that was the scary thing with me.
Yeah.
And that was doing a shoot with sightings down in the Gadsden Hotel down in Douglas, Arizona at the Mexican border. And there were all kinds of things going on there, and some things happened while we were there, and things that I hadn't. I let my guard down big time, because before I went there, I did the most stupid thing, and please, anybody that's hearing this, never do this. I thought I had my spiritual act together. I did the most arrogant thing and said, you know, if there's really a devil out there, give me your best shot. Now, that's dumb. And after I
said
that,
like an engraved invitation.
Well, exactly. But after I said that, it was within an hour, I got a call from sightings wanting me to go down and do this 3-day shoot chasing ghosts. And something got into me. Something followed me home.
Yeah.
And I was dying a true death. I know what a true death feels like, dying a true death feels like. And that is a spiritual death.
And it scares me.
We've
got very few minutes here, about two, so I'm going to ask you, because I'm sure our listeners now are going, oh, my God, that's scary.
Yeah,
so
it was.
Do you want to leave them hanging like that and just tell them to go buy your book, or do you want to give them some tips on how they can protect themselves?
Well, you know, I actually went back to some Catholic roots, and this is the best thing you can do. I believe, again, strongly in Jesus Christ, not about dogma, about truth. And I believe very strongly in angels. I believe in Michael, the archangel, and that's who I called upon. And as soon as I called, and I've been fighting this thing for 7 months. I mean, I also was doing stand-up comedy during that time. And I could put on a front, but I was dying. And once I invoked Michael and Jesus, I felt better, but I also got myself out of the way. I kept saying, God, help me do this. Then I finally got to, God, I can't do this. I need them to do it. And then that's what happened. And then some things manifested through that. And I was thinking about getting a St. Michael's Medal or something like that. And the next week I was on a television show down in Tucson because of doing things with sightings. It was called AZ or UFO AZ. And after the show, a young lady came to me and she goes, "Wow, there's Mikey." And I looked around. It was dark outside. And I said, "Mikey?" She goes, "Yeah, Michael the Archangel is standing right next to you." I said, "Really?" And she goes, "Yeah, Jesus Christ is standing right next to him." I said, "Oh?" And she goes, and she's having conversation with something I couldn't see, but I started to feel it. And then she takes off this necklace, and it's a St. Michael's medal. She goes, "This is for you." I said, "No, I can't take that." She goes, "No, Mikey says it's yours." I said, "What is it?" She said, "It's a St. Michael's medal." You know, she didn't know me. She didn't know what was going on in my life. We're here to help each other.
Well, and, you know, you may not agree with this, I don't know, but I tend to think that it's just like people who have near-death experiences. They tend to see, you know, God, Allah, the goddess. I know somebody who had a near-death experience and was raised a Christian and became a pagan because of it. So I think what we need to see is what shows up.
Hey, during that time, I was calling in Gandhi, Buddha, these aliens that I saw while I did this one alien in particular when I had the psilocybin mushroom. I called in everybody, aunts and uncles that were on the other side. I mean, it's not just one. It can be many, but the ones that you feel strongest about, it's all, you know, whatever makes you comfortable.
Yes, exactly. And I guess for me, it kind of simplifies it. If you just think there's like dark and there's light. There's stuff that seems to be embodied by love, and then there's stuff that seems to be very confused and angry.
And we have choice.
So I like to stay away from the confused, angry entity.
But Michael the Archangel, I say call on Michael if you're in a situation. And if you believe in God, just, you know, ask God.
Okay. Well, we are out of time, but tell our listeners one more time how they can get in touch with you. If you want them to, and certainly how they can get a copy of your book.
Well, you can get a copy of my book through lesrogersaz.com or through amazon.com, and you can contact me at les@lesrogersaz.com, and be more than happy to hear from everybody, and I do write people back.
Thanks, Les. This was the busiest my Facebook wall has been in quite some time.
Well, I thank you very much, Veronica. You are a very special person.
Well, so are you. And I really
appreciate, so are your listeners.
I really appreciate your book. It's given me a lot of courage to get back in touch with some of my own awarenesses so that I can be of more service, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, then peace and joy to everybody.
You too.
And thank you.
Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Yeah.